everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we discuss various topics like UFOs and ghosts and out-of-body experiences. If it's paranormal, that's what we want to talk about. And tonight, we're going to be talking about ghosts. And our guest is Kate Johnson. Now, Kate Johnson has actually been on this show before. She talked about some very, very interesting UFO encounters she had. She appeared, let me see, on January 24th of this year. So if any of you want to go look up her show, I mean, it's amazing. She's had some very amazing UFO encounters. And like a lot of people who see UFOs, she has also had some major ghost activity. And not only that, she actually joined a ghost hunting group and had some really, really amazing experiences hunting ghosts. So that's what we're going to talk about mostly tonight. Now, before I get to my guest, let me, of course, give you a little bit of what's going on in the world paranormal-wise. And there is some weird stuff going on. Here, I found this kind of interesting. Apparently, two fossils have been found in Kenya that are rewriting what we know about anthropology and human origins and the human family tree. Scientists have found and dated some bones from a 1.44 million-year-old Homo habilis and a 1.55 million-year-old Homo erectus. Now, the problem is these findings challenge the conventional view that these species evolved one after another, and instead these fossils show that they lived side by side in eastern Africa for apparently a half a million years. Doesn't surprise me at all, personally. I took 3 years anthropology in college, and I was really surprised to find out how much controversy there really is about human origins. And frankly, I think the fact that so many UFO aliens look just like human beings really raises a lot of questions about human origins at all. I'm not sure we evolved on this planet. But let's get on to our next story. Zechariah Sitchin, he's a very, very famous author. He wrote Worlds in Collision, and has really written a lot of books that are famous for popularizing the idea of ancient astronauts and things like this. Well, he's been charged by a federal grand jury, apparently. His attorney, Sam Wilson, has released a statement saying that the Southern District of New York has charged him with 5 counts, which include contempt of court for failure to hand over government documents he's alleged to have used in one of his books, false statements for which he made before a grand jury. He's charged with making false documents. He's charged with putting false information in his book. And finally, he's charged with advocating to overthrow the government. So, I don't know. Make of it what you will. Here's another interesting story, which is, you know, just very bizarre. But, you know, time is one of these things that people don't think we can travel through, like time travel. But the truth is there's been a lot of research, scientific research, into this area. And an Israeli scientist, Professor Amos Ori, believes that he has the designs for a basic time machine. And what's really interesting is he says that the machine is space-time itself. People have always assumed that if you had a time machine, you would need all these exotic equipment. And he says, no, not necessarily. Once you can get this time loop started, it would actually just live off itself. He says time travel research is based on bending space-time so far that the timelines actually warp back in on themselves to form a loop. And he believes it's possible to manipulate space-time to develop it in such a way so that if the proper conditions were achieved, the time machine would evolve on its own without any further intervention. So basically, and here I'll just quote him right here. He says, the machine is space-time itself. If we were to create an area with a warp like this in space that would enable timelines to close on themselves, it might enable future generations to return to visit our time. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting. Sounds like science fiction, I know, but a lot of the stuff that technology is coming out right now with is actually sounds like science fiction as well. So we'll see. The latest story I want to tell you a little bit about is MJ-12. There was a recent MUFON conference, and there was a big shocker. Someone has released a pair of papers, a set of papers, and these apparently show that the MJ-12 documents are not necessarily legitimate. Is this true or not? I don't know. In my own opinion, these documents may or may not be true, but the group that studies these UFOs is real and was composed of these high-level scientists and others and is continuing to do so. And I don't think the documents really are the important part of the puzzle here. But that's what's going on, and now I want to get to our guest tonight. Our guest is Kate Johnson, and as I said, she has had many experiences with ghosts and UFOs, and after having several experiences with ghosts, began researching ghosts in a more professional manner with a group, which she did for 13 years, traveling, you know, across Southern California and the United States. And we're going to talk about some of her personal encounters and some of the cases she investigated. It should be very interesting. Kate, thank you for coming back onto the show.
Hi, Preston. It's good to hear your voice. How you been?
I've been great.
You've been very busy writing books.
Yes, always busy writing books. Many, many stories out there.
I want to thank you for the copies. You autographed them for me. They'll be worth thousands of dollars in the future.
Well, let's hope so.
Oh, they will. Not a problem. The more that humans evolve and they open themselves up to the universe, things are, you know, they'll get their answers. Hopefully, if they're listening. That's all they need to do is pay attention and listen. Goodness.
Right. You know, Kate, when I first began investigating UFOs, I really didn't believe in ghosts, to be perfectly honest. And
I remember you telling me that.
And I just started asking the people I was interviewing, have you had any other strange experiences? And one after another, these people who had seen UFOs started telling me, oh, well, my house is haunted, or I had this amazing ghost encounter. So I started interviewing people about that, and I think there's some sort of a connection there. I don't think all people who see ghosts see UFOs or vice versa, but man, oh man, there is some sort of connection. And you're a perfect example of this, because, I mean, you've had a lot of experiences.
Well.
Well, tell us one of your early ones, you know, one of your personal ones before you got involved in professional ghost hunting.
Excuse me, I guess the best place to start would be my childhood. The movie Sixth Sense with Bruce Willis and Haley Joel Osment. You know, it's funny because children can sense and see things that adults don't. This is something that most adults talk about. I mean, it's just like animals. Animals can sense. They can feel. They have the ability to... It's like they're on a different wavelength, and they definitely are, not the same wavelength as a human. Their senses are very acute, and ours are almost nothing compared to, you know, the sniffer of a dog and their hearing and, you know, cats and their eyes. And I found as a child that when my relatives would pass away, they would come for a visit before they would go on to wherever it was. I'm grateful that no other spirits came, because it would probably be a frightening experience, just like the movie Sixth Sense. But
right. So you're, I mean, it's not a scary experience if it's your relative.
Yeah, so they were my relatives. So, you know, it wasn't a scary experience. And of course, I had a very unusual childhood. Anyway, there were so many unusual things that happened in my life that, you know, by the time I was a very independent little kid anyway, but I had to grow up really quick. But I tell you, there are some the things that I have been through. I have spoken to quite a few people. I've interviewed quite a few people and their children. And these children talk about, you know, invisible playmates, or, you know, they can see, you know, they talk about, well, let me give you an, you know, when I was 7, my grandfather died, my dad's dad.
Uh-huh.
And he died a few days before Valentine's Day, but he was buried on Valentine's Day. And I was 7 years old, and he and I had a great relationship. He was a lot like I am. Mother Nature, he was, you know, into plants, into insects, into animals. He just had this wisdom about him, and we had just such a connection. He was just a very amazing man. And when he passed away, the night before he was buried, the night before the funeral, I was laying in bed, and I was a night owl. I'm a night owl now. I was a night owl then. And I had my flashlight, and I was under my covers reading a book, and a Nancy Drew book, actually. And it was probably about 11:30. I was getting tired, and so I turned my flashlight off, set my book down, and laid my head down, and I noticed, looking out my bedroom door into the hallway, my folks' bedroom was right across the way, and my grandmother was here, and she was sleeping in my folks' room, and my folks were in my brother's room. So as I was looking out through my doorway into the hall, there was an orange light, a very pale orange light that looked like candlelight, and I thought, you know, we don't have a nightlight in the hallway. So I kind of sat up and sat there for a minute thinking, well, I guess I'll have to get up and go look what this is. And I thought, oh, my goodness, maybe the house is on fire. But I didn't, you know, I didn't hear anything. Believe it or not, when your house is on fire, you can hear a lot. And right before I set my feet on the floor, this figure showed up in my doorway. And that was the source of the illumination. It was my grandfather.
Wow.
And he was quite transparent. The light wasn't very bright, but it was enough that his self-illumination did cast a glow in my room. And, you know, I wasn't frightened. I wasn't scared at all. It never even crossed my mind. When I saw his face, he had that smile that he always had, and he said, can I come in? And I was already sitting on the edge of my bed, and I, yeah, sure. He came in and actually sat on the bed. I could feel the bed move. There
wow.
was a weight.
Now, did he look just like he did when he died?
Yeah, yes. He used to wear these old raggedy jeans, and they were always folded up at the bottom of the foot. And he'd had always wore suspenders, and he had these really thin plaid felt or flannel shirts, and they were always rolled up to the elbow. And even in the summertime, he wore these flannel shirts. And he sat down. And what I thought was, if this is a ghost, how can I be feeling him move my bed? As he sat down, my bed moved. I mean, I felt him.
It must be at least partly physical in their bed.
You know, it's
manifesting like that.
You know, they have to be. And over the years, of all this research and being in the group for 13 years, you know, I tell you what, after you've had a baseball thrown at you, and it comes from nowhere. I mean, there's nobody standing there.
Wow.
And after you've been bitten by something that you can't see, yeah, there's a way they can manifest into the physical, let me tell you.
Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, as a child, like I said, there are a lot of children. It wasn't just me. But, you know, it wasn't something that kids understood. I mean, Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense ended up being a ghost. But this little boy at the time didn't realize that because he looked so real. And that's what happens with children, they see these ghosts, these apparitions or spirits, whatever you want to call them, and they think they're real. They, you know, their minds are not working. They don't understand that this may not be real. They haven't had the experience. They, you know.
Well, but it is real. It's just...
Exactly. In trying to tell a parent, you know, I tried to tell my parents that, you know, when my mom's sister died, they had 11 children in their family, and there were 7 girls and 4 boys.
Oh,
and
goodness.
When my mom's sister Maybelline died, she came to see me, and she passed away a couple of years after my grandfather. And I had tried to tell my mom that she kept telling me to look in her Bible. And she would come almost every night. And the very following morning, I would go to my mom and tell her, you know, Aunt Maybelline came to see me. And, of course, my mother, being the fear-based person that she is, did not want to hear a thing. She doesn't want to hear a thing about ghosts or UFOs or anything.
Did your aunt look physical when she came? When she, like,
yes,
an apparition?
Yes, she did. She looked very physical. Unlike my grandfather,
wow.
Maybelline looked physical.
And she would actually talk?
She did. She did.
That's actually pretty unusual. Usually in most ghost encounters, they don't speak to people.
Exactly. But she did. She spoke to me. And very soft voice, like she was in real life, and she kept telling me, I kept telling her, Aunt Mina, you're not alive anymore. You need to go find the light. And she kept telling me, tell your mother to look in the Bible. Where's my Bible? So anyway, finally, after after about 7-8 days of this, a good week, my mom finally went and got her Bible out, unpacked it out of storage, got it out, and there was her will.
Wow.
And she had had a nervous breakdown and spent most of her time in and out of therapy and a woman's facility where, you know, women would stay under supervision, not really a hospital, but back then there were homes that, you know, these women could go to when they had a nervous breakdown or collapsed, and they would live under one roof and, you know, that kind of thing. But we never, you know, we didn't know anything about a will. We didn't think she'd made one. But for a week, she came to me and told me, where's my Bible? Where's my Bible? As clear as day, where's my Bible?
Wow.
I need to find my Bible.
That's a really classic case of a ghost that's coming with a purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why I think a lot of these, you know, spirits appear to people.
Oh, sure.
They have a message or, you know, something unresolved.
Sure. So, yeah, we found the Bible. We found her will. Everything was written out and, you know, everything worked out. In the case of my grandfather, he told me that he just wanted to say goodbye. He didn't get to say goodbye. And he wanted me to know that he was okay. And he said, I've come to say bye to your grandmother. Well, he and I had maybe a conversation of about 5-6 minutes. And he validated a lot of things about me, for me to continue on how I believe that there's more that meets the eye. Because, you know, when I would be in the garden with him, and, you know, even as a small child, I was talking to him about UFOs. I mean, at 4 years old, you know, I was born in 1958, so, you know, 4 years old, that was 1962. UFOs were not a big topic of conversation. Roswell, I remember watching on TV at that age, there were some clips about Roswell, and There was another situation with a gentleman someplace back east about seeing lights in the sky. And no one knew about crop circles, nothing. I mean, you know, it just started up. No one knew what the lights were in the sky. And as we keep evolving, you know, we're figuring these things out slowly but surely. But after my grandfather left me, he went across the hallway, and I watched him. He walked, just kind of floated, kind of walked, I guess, and went in the bedroom, and I saw him lean over, which I knew he was probably kissing my grandmother on the forehead, and I heard her say, "Joseph," and I couldn't really hear anything else. I heard a very slight mumbling, but it wasn't very loud, and I knew she was talking with him. And then a few minutes later, I saw him bend over again, and then he straightened up, and then the light faded, and he was gone.
Wow.
And I got out of bed, and I went in to the bedroom, and I was standing by the bed, and I remember shaking my grandmother, "Grandma, are you awake?" And she raised up, and she said, "What are you doing out of bed?" She was crying. And she asked me, "What are you doing out of bed?" And I said, "Don't cry." I said, "He's okay. He came by and talked to me, too. And I know he's okay, so don't cry. He's okay. You have to know that, you know, he's back where he belongs." And you know, these words out of my mouth, I don't know how I knew. But she did feel better. And at the breakfast table the following morning, she and I were talking about seeing my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, who was cooking breakfast at the time, had an absolute fit. She just, this is just not a topic of conversation. You just do not discuss that. It's that, you know, that is just not cool. You just don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't think that's terribly uncommon. It seems to me this subject kind of cuts right to the heart of people's emotions for some reason.
It really does.
I've upset people in my family by saying, you know, "Oh, there's a ghost," you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they don't want to hear it.
Mm-mm. No, they don't. You know, it's just fear. Nobody knows really what it is. We really don't know what ghosts are. Most of us who have studied or ghost hunted and, you know, whatever else, we have opinions, but that's all they are, opinion, speculation.
All right. Well, I think it's pretty clear that most ghosts are just people, but just people.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I'm not going to say all.
No. You know, it's funny because when the physical comes into it, it gets pretty downright scary because you don't know how to fight it. You don't know how to handle it. In Arkansas, we went to I started in 1983, and some of my classmates in college, we were sitting around talking about UFOs. That was always the big topic with me, is UFOs. I came out of the womb talking about UFOs. And a friend of mine, Glenn, who was in a lot of my classes, see, back in college, we used to roller skate. That was a big thing, skating from class to class. And so Glenn and his girlfriend at the time when we first started this, Linda, we were all buddies in college. We all had classes together, and, you know, we hung out after school, and, you know, it was just, they were just really neat people. They believe the same way I do. And so, of course, you know, we all gravitate to people that we get along with, that we can talk with. And we were sitting on a couple of benches in between classes, and Linda asked me, she says, "Well, we talk about UFOs. Let's talk about something else. How about ghosts?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, all right, I've got some great stories." So I told them about my childhood, and I said, "You know, I don't expect you to believe me. I don't care. You guys are adults. You know that there are a lot of things in this world we can't explain, especially the fact that we use so little of our brain power." And so the ghost topic came up, And we ended up flying back to Arkansas. Was the very first ghost hunting expedition that we all did.
Wow.
And it was from
Why Arkansas?
Well, one of our classmates came up at lunch one day and was saying, well, you know, you guys ought to come back to Arkansas with me. You know, I'm going to go back and visit my folks. And he said, there's kind of a reason why I want you guys to come. And so the reason was, he said that his mom and dad felt that their house was really haunted by something that, you know, not a relative. It wasn't a spectral ghost you could see or feel. They said it was just an unearthly cold, and that when this cold showed up, things started flying off the walls.
Wow.
Things actually were thrown at you. And I thought, wow, this would be pretty cool. And, of course, you know what, when you hear things like this, even me, with as much as I've been through in my 49 years and things that I've seen, you know, you still stop and you still don't just give faith in this person. You know, you still have to stop, and the human part of you says, you know, we got to stop. We got to, you know, kind of ascertain this person. And but you know what? My research hasn't been anything but regular people. That's how I've kept it. UFO-wise, it's been regular people. It hasn't been the politics. It hasn't been anything that you see on TV. It's just regular people. And so is our ghost hunting. A lot of it started out by just friends and classmates that said, hey, you know, my folks, or, you know, I grew up in a house, or, oh, hey, you know, there was a house and where I used to live, and that's how we kind of got started.
Right.
And so it went on for 13 years because there was just so much. I mean, even after 13 years, we ended up having to go our separate ways, and there was still so much we could have been doing up until now. I mean, I'm sure quite through the rest of our lives, there has been so much.
Were you ever able to find anything out about the Arkansas house?
Well, you know what? I don't believe my... I'm not religious. I'm spiritual.
Right.
So my belief system is a little different. His parents were Baptists.
Oh.
And, of course, they believed in... They thought the house, you know, it was under a demonic spell or something.
Yeah, demonic possession.
Right. Well, anyway.
Exorcism.
Yeah, well, you know. What my belief is, from all of the years that I've seen this thing, I do believe that there is negative energy out there.
Uh-huh.
I really do.
So that's what they had?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I've seen vortexes. For those, vortexes are areas in the earth that the energy will come out of. It's a very spiritual thing, but it is something that has been explained. Sedona is really well known for their vortexes. They're very,
several,
you know,
times.
Yeah, you can sit and meditate. They're supposed to help you see through your third eye, and, you know, all of this, there's just so much. But when we got to his parents' house, a little farm on 15 acres, they had horses and some cows. They didn't grow any crops or anything except for a vegetable garden. My belief was that this was a vortex of some sort.
Oh,
somehow this energy came up and just began, because when he was growing up, there was nothing wrong. They never experienced anything. But
well, it wasn't like built over a graveyard or,
yeah,
you know,
well, the house,
sacrifices going on there or something like that.
You know,
you hear about
I don't
that.
Know. You never know. If something starts all of a sudden, just like with their situation, that was a family home. His great-great-grandfather had built it in the late 1800s. And it was passed down from family to family to family. And his parents had it, raised their kids, never had a problem, never once felt like there was something horrible living in the house with them.
That's weird.
But they had had some seismic activity and nothing major at all, but there had been some seismic activity over the course of a couple of months, and my guess is that somehow it opened some sort of a vortex and of negative energy. And this, you know, this is basically what, you know, Glenn and Linda thought, because they believe a lot like I do. You know, we don't believe in demonic whatever, but I do believe, like I said, in the positive and negative energy. And it could very well have been some sort of a negative entity that came in through another dimension or another parallel universe, whatever you want to call it, and decided that this, you know, was where it was going to reside, I guess. But the night that we got there, after eating dinner, we were doing dishes. We shooed his parents out of the kitchen. I was standing at the sink, and all of a sudden, I got hit in the back of the head with something. And, I mean, it hurt. It almost knocked me out. And when I finally was able to turn around and look, it was a baseball. Glenn and Linda were standing on either side of me. I was washing dishes, and we were just finishing up, and I felt this baseball hit me in the back of the head, but of course I didn't know what it was. When I turned around, it was bouncing on the floor, and then it just came to a stop. So he picked it up, and his father, his eyes were really big, and he goes, "I don't know what to say." He said, "There's been so many strange things happening in this house in the last year." He said, "I don't know. I have no clue." But he said, "Things are thrown around." He said, "My wife got bit, and she lifted up her shirt, and on her hip, she had these teeth marks. I mean, they were actual teeth marks." And she said, "I was making the bed, and all of a sudden I felt something latch onto me." She said, "I actually thought a snake was in the bed. I thought I was being bitten by a rattlesnake." And she lifted up her shirt, looked at it in the mirror, and there were small teeth marks, like a child. Not like an adult, but like a child.
How bizarre.
Yeah, it was really weird. Well, the following morning, we were up for a little while, and then everybody went to bed, and we got up in the morning very early. They were very early risers. And we were having breakfast, and on my arm, I was holding my orange juice, and then all of a sudden, I felt this, like something latched onto my arm, and my right arm, right at my elbow. And when I looked, I had these bite marks. Something bit me. I was sitting at the kitchen table, and something bit me. And it looked like like children. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a big mouth. It was small, like a child. So I thought, okay, this is not good.
So what is doing this? I mean,
what is doing this? You know, it's invisible. What is doing this? So anyway, we all went outside, and their mom and dad were still inside, and she came out, and she had a big red mark on her left arm, right down from her shoulder on that big fleshy part of her arm. And she'd been hit with a glass, with a juice glass. You know, she'd been washing dishes, drying the dishes, and she said she walked over to the table to pick up the coffee pot, the percolator, and set it back on the counter. And all of a sudden, she said she was smacked in the arm with something. She turned around, and the glass was laying right there on the floor. It didn't break. She picked it up, but she said when she picked it up, it was as cold as ice.
Wow.
When I picked up the baseball, it wasn't cold. There was no cold. I didn't feel any cold. We were there for about 4 days. I didn't feel any cold.
Well, one explanation I've heard for this psychic cold is that the energy is sucked out of the heat energy is sucked out of the room to manifest and make these telekinesis type effects.
Right. Well, we never felt any cold. We kept expecting, you know, to feel freezing cold, and it didn't happen. I mean, the house that I grew up in, we had a cold spot in the hallway, and it was there for years. And I mean, it was just unearthly. Never knew what it was. We had some interesting things happen in that house when I was growing up.
Well, I just want to tell everyone that remind them that you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett. Our guest tonight is Kate Johnson, and we're talking about her amazing ghost encounters. If any of you out there want to call in and ask Kate any questions, this is a call-in show, and our number, toll-free, is 877-876-5227. I'll repeat that one more time, so you can write it down, 877-876-5227. Sorry to interrupt you, Kate, I just wanted to make sure that people know who we're talking to.
That's okay, Preston, not a problem. I get so involved because this topic of conversation just absolutely amazes me. Some of the things that I've seen, especially while we were ghost hunting, but, you know, there's something to it. There's something. I have no idea of what it is. I'm guessing parallel universe. I'm guessing dimensional.
I'm sure there's something to it. You know, I interviewed these two ladies who rented an apartment in North Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
And it started out really innocently. There was just this knocking going on in the walls. But within 3 months, objects were moving in the house. There was a very cold spot in the hallway. Apparitions started appearing. Their bed would shake at night. And it just went on from there. And I ended up interviewing both of them, and their neighbor was having experiences. I called up the manager of the apartment. They were having experiences. This entire apartment building was, like, crazily haunted.
Wow.
And I'm sure this is happening to a lot of people. And, there is something to it.
There is. You know, just like UFOs, definitely. You know, as a child, seeing my dead relatives, you know, you didn't see movies about that. There were movies out there about aliens and ghosts like The Haunting. That was an excellent movie, a very exceptional movie about ghosts. It was wonderful. I just love it. Julie Harris played a wonderful part.
Right.
But, you know, seeing dead relatives, you know, I often thought, okay, that's cool. You know, I never thought there was something wrong with me. I just thought, okay, you know, that's all right. Works for me. Thought it was just part of life. But, you know, my little friends, they didn't see their dead relatives. But I find now that the more research that I've done over especially the last 20, 25, 26 years, since about 1980, I have spoken to more children that have told me that they see people come out of their closets, or they wake up in the middle of the night and they see a woman that they can see her chest and her head and no feet. And I think, okay, now, are we talking ghosts or are we talking UFO abduction? You know, especially when a child is concerned, you know, they can just tell you what they see. They're not analyzing at all what they're seeing. They're just telling you what they're seeing. And so you have to pretty much try to figure out what it is that they are seeing. And in some of the research that I've done, some of these children were being abducted. Once I got into the stories, once they started talking, they were abductions.
Wow.
But a lot of them were talking about a playmate, you know, another child. And
you know, it's strange how children can see ghosts and adults can't. And in my research, which is so bizarre,
mm-hmm.
twice as many women than men see ghosts, which seems to me like an awfully high number, but it was really striking.
It is. I agree.
And you know, there's this one really interesting case of this guy. He committed suicide. He was a police officer, and he ended up being a paraplegic and just couldn't take it and committed suicide. And his ghost apparently started appearing, but only the child could see it. She would start screaming, "There's the man, there's the man," and no one else in the room could ever see him.
See it. Mm-hmm.
And she would point to him as he was walking across the room. And there was another case. Two sisters started screaming. They woke up because their dead aunt was sitting in the chair in their bedroom. And the parents came running in, and they didn't see anything. The kids were still screaming. The ghost was there.
Yeah.
So how would you explain that? I mean, are they...
Well...
The ghost is there, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I do believe this. You know, dogs can see things. Animals can see things.
And it's at a higher vibration, huh?
It is. They are able to sense or see a higher vibration, another universe, whatever you want to call it. And I do believe that adult humans can do this. But the norm, or the, you know, what most people think, it's that the innocence of the child, since we're not, you know, they're not jaded yet,
right,
as an adult, they are still in touch with the energy.
I believe that's true, because I've got a lot of accounts of children who've actually levitated.
Yeah.
And, you know, so children have this access to a lot of these normally, you know, I think a normal human being fully actualized would have all these powers. You know, love, levitation, telekinesis.
Oh, definitely.
But children seem to be closer to enlightened than a lot of adults are.
That's very true. Huh. I agree. And from what I've seen in my research over these many, many years, I believe that that is the place to start. And that is why I have spoken to so many parents with their children. And, you know, there are some children that have really great imaginations. I had a great imagination when I was a kid, but I knew where the boundary was, you know, between my imagination and then what was really going on. And I didn't have an imaginary playmate. But, you know, I've run into that and then come to find out, you know, there wasn't anything. But it just depends on how skilled you are in knowing what questions to ask, what to look for. And I tell you what, it took me a long time, even with a degree in psychology. It takes a little while, especially where children are concerned, because each child is different. Their environment is different. The way the parents raise them, take care of them, you know, abuse issues, all sorts of things.
All these things factor in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's so many different factors. And
well, you know, I had this one case of this guy I interviewed, and he had an imaginary friend as a child, but his imaginary friend started being bad and doing bad things, messing the house up, leaving lights on,
mm-hmm.
and actually, like, knocked something down and hurt somebody at one point. And it turned into a really bad, full-blown-out poltergeist haunting that
wow.
just went on for years.
Well, you know, this house in Arkansas, you know, I would have definitely thought poltergeist, but there were no children. And most, I would say 99% of the poltergeist cases that we researched, that we observed,
right.
there were children in the house.
Oh,
and
really?
I do believe that their psyches, their, you know, I mean, there's so much of our minds we don't use. Just, I mean, just as an example, a perfect example, since I'm such a movie addict, is Phenomenon with John Travolta.
Right. It was a good movie.
You know, after... You know, you have to form your own opinion as if you think it was the tumor doing that to his mind or if the light in the sky was actually something from an alien craft or an alien being. It was very well done. It didn't, you know, it just left you to your own thoughts, to your own opinion. But it's very true. That is exactly what we can do with our minds if we were using all of our minds, even half of our minds. There was a time when I was a teenager. Now, I didn't really get along with my folks. Being adopted, you know, it just, there just was something. We just didn't connect.
Right.
And I had always been open-minded, a very independent child, and my folks are my adopted folks are very fear-based people. And so, of course, there was a lot of friction there. And, there was one day that my mom and I had had a fight, and I was so angry because it's very hard to reason with someone who, or speak to someone that is not reasonable. And that was how my mother was, how she was not someone you could talk to,
right.
Not open-minded. And I remember banging my bedroom door, slamming my bedroom door shut, and I was standing in the middle of my room. I was 13, and I was so mad that I wanted to throw something. I wanted to hit my wall. I wanted to do something. And all of a sudden, my blinds in my window started just flying all over the place. I mean, they just started moving.
Wow.
I mean, just shaking and moving. And they actually literally came off the hooks and landed on the floor. And it startled me so much that whatever it was I was doing, it stopped. Now, I have a friend. His name is Tim. He did the same thing when he was young. He would get so angry that he said, I could just stand there and this anger would just be pouring out of me and things would just be flying.
You know what, I have a theory to explain that. I think it's because the astral body,
mm-hmm.
which is also known as the emotional body,
yes,
has become very, very activated, and with nowhere to put all this astral, you know, energy basically is what
right.
it is. It's expanded to such a degree, and it's got just so much pent-up actual energy that I believe it's physically affecting the environment in the same way a ghost would.
I agree. You know, I do. I agree. There's so many different explanations for it, you know, but until we actually unravel more, we're just speculating.
Right.
You know, that's all we can do, but I agree.
Right. Well, you know what's also weird is I've had out-of-body experiences. After my mom died, I read all about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I read a bunch of books on it. I did the exercises, and it worked. And each time, there was a whole phase I went through for like a year, where each time I'd pop out of my body, I'm thinking, oh, like I'm like a ghost. You know, I'm like a ghost. I could actually walk through walls.
Wow.
And stuff. And I became obsessed with trying to affect the physical environment, trying to turn on a light,
mm-hmm.
trying to knock something over, anything. I could not, for the life of me, do it. And I've talked to people and read about accounts of astral travelers, you know, people who've gone out of their body who have been able to do it.
Yeah.
But the accounts are very limited, and it involves a lot of downstepping your vibration and retaining, I guess, a part of your vital body
mm-hmm.
and stuff like this. But it's just really interesting to me, this connection between the physical and the non-physical worlds.
I agree. It absolutely fascinates me to the point of obsession. And I can admit that. I do. I can admit that. You know, it's funny because I've been so obsessed with the UFO phenomenon, the crop circle phenomenon, especially the fact growing up on a ranch, I spent the summers in Hanford where my aunt and uncle, my dad's sister and her husband lived. And they had a big, huge ranch, cattle ranch. We had almonds and cotton. And I tell you what, that's a story in itself, but went out one night, heard a scream. I thought it was a rabbit screaming. We went out the front door. It was probably around 11 o'clock at night. We were, my two cousins and I, who are older than me, we were playing Monopoly while we were watching science fiction theater, and we hear this scream. Well, I had rabbits as pets, and it sounded like a rabbit screaming.
Right.
So, of course, I'm going to go running out and find out what this is. Well, it was coming from our cotton field, which was across from the house. And when we got out there, we found that a huge circle, I'm guessing this circle was probably 20 to 30 feet in diameter. All of our cotton plants had been like something laid on it. They were all smushed. And
were they, like,
you know, running
woven
through cotton is not an easy thing to do, especially when it's so high and it's ready to be picked. We ran through that cotton, and it wasn't, you know, we weren't running very easily. It's pretty hard to run through a cotton field. And when we got to this point, this crop circle was here.
Was
but
it
we didn't know it was a crop circle.
Was the circle, like, crushed, or was it, like, woven?
No, it was just crushed. It just
like something
like
crushed
something
it.
Huge just landed on top of the cotton,
wow.
The cotton plants. And, of course, they're very pliable. But a lot of, you know, cotton has little sticker things on it. You know, the cotton bolls and that have little stickers, and there's also a nice little spider that likes cotton. So I wasn't real thrilled about running through the cotton field. But, you know, my point being is these things that have happened to me that, you know, it has really obsessed me. And it really driven me to travel all over the United States. I've been to South America. I've been to Canada. After reading Shirley MacLaine's book about the Andes, I went to the Andes to have a look. And, you know, there's just so much. Lake Shasta, prime example of UFO. If anybody wants to see a UFO, go to Lake Shasta in California.
Really?
Salton Sea, another place, Southern California. Go to the Salton Sea. Lots of...
That's a weird place.
It is a very weird place. It's got a lot of unusual energy. And it is, especially over the Chocolate Mountains. There's a mountain range called the Chocolate Mountains. And pretty much on any given night, you can see some sort of UFO activity. Of course, there is a base down there, so you never know. You never know. But,
well, this,
you know,
this thing that landed in your field, did you ever find out what it was?
Well, the following morning when we got out of bed, my uncle, since we had lots of cattle, he had a Huey. He purchased an old Huey helicopter. And he used it for cattle drives. And so we talked him into taking it up and going over, because we told him something happened in the cotton field and we wanted to see, you know, what happened. And we told him that, you know, the cotton had been depressed and we couldn't really get back out there and see exactly what it was when you're standing on ground looking. So we wanted to have a better view. So since he had this old helicopter, he took us up, and we flew, you know, from the back area of where the cotton gin was. The helicopter was kept there, about a quarter of a mile behind the house, down a dirt road along a big canal. Anyway, got in the helicopter, flew over the house, and we're all looking out the window. There was a big side window that they had put in,
right.
And there it was, a big circle. It wasn't uneven. It wasn't oval.
Huh.
It was just a big circle.
How big?
I'm not good with footage, guessing footage, but when we got out there, it was 30 feet across.
You know, that's actually a very common number to hear.
Yeah.
that's about how big a lot of these UFOs are.
But we didn't see anything. But my little investigative nose walked down the road about half a mile to a woman who lived on the west side of our cotton field, and she was a bit of a recluse. Husband died. She was just not a happy person and just stayed to herself. But she was a night owl, too. So I walked down there during the morning after breakfast and knocked on her door, and I asked her if she saw anything, a light or anything, because her living room window faced our cotton field. And she waved me in, and I told me to sit down, and she said, "I'm just going to tell you this once." She said, "There's something out in that field, and I don't care if you believe me or not, but I see lightning out in that field." I said, "Lightning? You know, like lightning, a storm?" She said, "No, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't come from the air. It comes out of the ground." And she said, I don't know what it is. I've seen a light hanging over. I've seen it fly away, but I don't know what it is, and I don't care. I don't want to be bothered. So you have your answer. Now get out of my house." So that was it, lightning. She saw lightning coming out of the ground. It wasn't lightning coming out of the sky. It was lightning coming out of the ground.
And lightning, of course, doesn't come out of the ground.
No, lightning doesn't come out of the ground.
Well, it actually, in a way, does, but not that way.
Right. But she also said that she saw lights, usually one light.
Huh.
And I asked her, "Well, how big is this light?" And she goes, "How the hell am I supposed to know? I don't know. I don't care. I don't want to be bothered." And I said, "Did you realize that there's a big depression, like something landed in our cotton? I mean, our cotton plants are mushed down. Did you happen to see like a helicopter or something?" She goes, "Well, I don't think your uncle had his helicopter. I didn't hear a helicopter."
Huh.
"But I saw lightning."
Well, what was that thing screaming, do you think?
I don't know. I have no clue. But you know what? Over the years, in my investigations, I've heard people say that when they have had sightings, especially camping or in the wilderness or even driving home along a dark road from the city to the country where they live, if they see a light, they get out of the car, I've had people tell me that they've heard these screams.
I have heard this.
Yeah, I've heard it a lot.
This was true in the Kecksburg case, I think.
Yeah.
Remember
that's
that?
Very true.
The 1965 Pennsylvania UFO crash?
Yes, I remember. I know it well. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's probably what it was. It was one of the ETs screaming to get back, "Let me in the shed."
You know, I've teased about that, too. Some of my friends just kind of look at me funny. Uh-huh, yeah. But, you know, back to ghosts and UFOs, you know what? There's a way to get into this dimension. There's a way for these parallel universes or worlds or whatever it is. I believe we're energy beings. When we die, we go back to where it is we came from. I don't know how it works. I would love to know how it works, but I don't want to have to die right now to find out. I'm having a lot of fun doing the investigative thing. Now, in this, just to finish the story, in Arkansas, they actually had their minister come out, and I did a prayer, a Wiccan prayer, and the minister came out about an hour later, and I set out candles. I used all sorts of different kinds of oils and just a positive, positive Wiccan prayer, a Mother Earth prayer is what I call it. And the minister came.